From the studios of All Classical Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is The Score, now celebrating 20 years of music in the movies. I'm Edmund Stone. Today on The Score, we are marking the 20th anniversary of this radio program, and I invite you to be my guests as we take a look and a listen back at the show and its two decades of excellence with music from some of my personal favorite episodes. From interviewing composers such as Alexandre Desplat on the streets of Paris to landmark episodes 60 Years of James Bond and quirky comedic forays, including the Edmonds, awards you wish Hollywood would give out. It's 20 years of The Score. It all started one dark and stormy afternoon in winter 2006. I was sitting in the cramped, archaic recording studio at what was then the very modest home of All Classical Portland, situated in a small wing of a local high school. I was a part-time weekend host, doing a live show and various fill-in spots as needed. What that particularly rainy and windy day needed, in my opinion, was something to brighten things up a bit. Having trod the boards in England with a small touring Shakespeare company and worked with the BBC as an entertainment correspondent in Hollywood during the 1980s, I felt that what was required was a jolly good bit of entertainment. Something rousing and cheerful and would evoke a bygone era of Hollywood. We only had about a dozen CDs at the station that had film music at the time, and one of those was a particular favourite of mine, Eric Korngold's The Seahawk. I received cheerful emails after the show expressing how much listeners liked the piece. The next week I played some more film music, receiving an even more enthusiastic wave of emails. By the third week, I asked my invisible audience what they thought of using film music on the show, and again, the response was just as exuberant. After a chat with John Pittman, our music director, who is now our program director, it was decided to give it a try. The Score was born. Off to a wobbly start. Let's hear the piece that started it all. Thank you. Music from Eric Wolfgang Korngold's The Seahawk from 1940, a work that began the score 20 years ago on April the 8th, 2006. Back in 2006, film music on a classical radio station was not just a novel idea, it was considered a radical one. But I had fallen in love with movie music as a boy, and living in Hollywood deepened my appreciation for it. I loved how it enhanced the storytelling of a film, and in many cases became more popular than the movie itself. Many of the early score programs were on the composers themselves, showcasing the variety of works they created. Some of my favorite shows featured exclusive interviews that were definitely unique. Amongst these are my interviews with multiple Academy Award-winning French composer Alexandre Desplat. I once asked him what he would do if he weren't composing music. After thoughtful contemplation, he told me that he thought he'd simply play his flute on the metro in Paris. Moments like that make this one of the best jobs I could ever imagine. I caught up with Alexandre one day as he was out for a run in the streets of Paris. Bienvenue.
Hello, everyone.
We have to let our audience know that if you're hearing a little bit of ambient sound here, it's because we're speaking to Alexandre Desplat in Paris, but he's also... Well, tell us, where are you taking this call, Alexandre?
I'm just under the bells of Saint-Sulpice Church, you know, the church which is in the Da Vinci Code. I went out running when you called me on the phone. So I'm stopped to be in the church, to be in a quieter area, but unfortunately, it's the best I'm going You always need some kind of a musical background, don't I? So here we are, under the bells.
Always wonderful to speak with Alexandre Desplat and to hear his music. Here is Lily's theme from Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, composed in 2011 by Alexandre Desplat. I've done thousands of interviews in my career, but it still makes me smile every time I think about Alexandre taking a break from his jog through the streets of Paris to take my call. Another favourite interview I've had was my first with Michael Giacchino, the incredibly talented and prolific composer of so many films. He had just written the music for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and was keenly aware of how important it was to honour the legacy of the franchise and the loyalty of the fans. Michael is a fan too, and loved the movies as a kid. He spoke with me about having Planet of the Apes action figures on a shelf in his studio.
If you look around my office, if you could see where I'm sitting right now, there are Planet of the Apes toys that are all over the place, and they were here before I worked on Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, because one of my first loves, even before Star Wars, was Planet of the Apes as a kid, and I loved it, and it was one of the early films that I saw that made me so interested in filmmaking and makeup and special effects.
Another film he had been hired to score was the reboot of the Star Trek franchise in 2009. He was absolutely giddy about the opportunity, and he had those action figures as a kid too. Now let's hear some of the music he created for the new franchise reboot of Star Trek in 2009, Enterprising Young Men by Michael Giacchino. The sound of the Kelvin Timeline, a piece called Enterprising Young Men, composed by Michael Giacchino for the reboot of the Star Trek franchise in 2009. Michael Giacchino has scored more than 50 major films, from Pixar to Star Wars, Mission Impossible, and the Marvel Universe. He's been a fan of the score for years, and I've been delighted to have him on the show multiple times. Speaking of Star Trek, I have created several shows celebrating the iconic franchise. When I was writing the episode dedicated to Star Trek's 50th anniversary, I interviewed Gerald Fried, one of the original composers from the 1960s television series that started it all. This is what he told me about how he created the fight theme. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Edmund.
You're best known in Star Trek for your music to the Star Trek fight.
Yes, I'm delighted that it picked up a mystique to it. To me, the most effective music is a combination of the entire history of music plus the added bite of 21st century music. To me, the Star Trek stories always had a human quality. They were like people's problems that are only out in outer space, which I think is one of the appeals of the show. So I use the harmonies, say, of Mozart's basic triads, like but you can't write like that anymore because it sounds like bad Mozart. So what I did, I combined 20th century Stravinsky technique, actually, the simple harmonies, you know, but that was a chord of F. Then you add a chord of F sharp to that, the same triad, but only just a half step above. So it's still 19th century music, but with the 21st century juxtaposed. So instead of, you added those triads just one half step apart and you get this. And that was the characteristic sound of that particular fight.
Jerry Fried, thank you for being on The Score. We really appreciate you joining us today.
I've been very happy to and enjoyed our conversation.
Jerry, live long and prosper.
You too, Edmund.
Thank you. There you have it, proof that classical music has been, and always shall be, part of the Star Trek universe. That was the Fight theme, composed by Gerald Fried, who wrote some of the music to the original television series Star Trek in the 1960s. I think that this exclusive interview unearthed some of the most interesting Trek trivia I've ever heard. So now, let's hear what is likely the most recognizable theme song in the galaxy, the original theme music from Star Trek, composed by Alexander Courage. Was the original music by Alexander Courage for the 1960s television series Star Trek. Generations later, it still has us looking to the stars. I'm Edmund Stone, creator, host, and producer of The Score. Today, it's our 20th anniversary show, featuring some of my personal favorite moments of the past two decades of music in the movies. My very first interview with a film celebrity was with the great Vincent Price in 1971. I was 20 years of age, but being fearless or naive, I went to London to meet the Merchant of Menace at his home in Knightsbridge. That taped interview lay dormant in a box for decades. It had moved with me 7 or 8 times, I think. Then one day, my wife insisted I actually open that box and discovered the dusty tape. But wait, there was more. Another cassette tape in the carton held an interview with Alfred Hitchcock, one of the very last interviews he gave. And no, it wasn't my interview that killed him. With the help of All Classical's stalwart engineer, we resurrected the recordings. Although my voice clearly sounded, and was, much younger then, I realized these were true hidden gems, and in 2015, I crafted 2 Halloween-themed score shows around them. Let's hear a little from these 2 classical masters of the Golden Age of Hollywood. My first celebrity interview was with Vincent Price. It took place in London while the film star was making Dr. Fibes Rises Again. Here's part of our conversation. Price talks about his involvement in the 1968 horror film Witchfinder General, renamed for the American market as The Conqueror Worm.
I had a very bad time on that picture because the young director, Reeves, we didn't like each other. He was 23, you know. And he said, well, first of all, I think I ought to tell you that I didn't want you in the picture.
Well, that was my introduction to the gentleman.
And I said, well, that's very interesting. I mean, you know, then why am I in it? And he said, well, you were sort of forced on me. I didn't really want you at all. And he said, I don't want any of your tricks. I don't want any of the thing that everybody associates with Vincent Price. He said, I want something entirely fresh and new. But it was very difficult because he really didn't know how to tell me, how to give him what he wanted. And he had a very old-fashioned technique. In years ago, there used to be a lot of directors who were super cruel. You know, they were really nasty to you. And in this way, they felt they got the best performance out of you. Why, I don't know, because it was absolutely not true. And Mike kind of did this to me, but in a funny way, what he did get out of me was right.
Mm-hmm. I first read that you were going to make Fives, I wrote to you.
You wrote to me?
Yes, and you sent me a delightful little postcard.
Oh, gosh, I remember that.
Which, you do?
Yes, I do indeed.
Which said, thanks for the letter, glad you enjoy the films, I love making them sincerely. Yeah. And that really did it.
Yeah.
Handwritten card.
I really do answer fan mail, but, oh, that's marvellous.
Mr. Hitchcock, you are, if I may say so, a legend in your own lifetime. Have you ever had any real arguments with your editor on what should stay in or come out of a film? Because your films, if I may say so, are so unique, there isn't ever a spare or too much footage. It's all relevant. Have you ever had any discussions with your editor on that subject?
I never discuss a film with an editor. The reason being that it's pre-cut. See, I lay out a picture with every shot predetermined. So the editor, all he has to do is to join it up.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Hitchcock, which must have been asked to you many times? You were frightened or scared. So many people have enjoyed being scared. What actually scares Mr. Hitchcock?
Everything. I'm scared of all kinds of things. I'm not scared in the way that an audience is scared. I'm scared about the minor details of ordinary life, which, if you put them on the screen, would look ridiculous.
And does Mr. Alfred Hitchcock, the director, still appear in his own films?
Oh, yes, yes.
Did you originally intend to do this, or has it just happened?
No, I just happened to start doing it in a picture called Blackmail in 1929. I was in an underground subway train.
How would you like to be thought of when Mr. Hitchcock is no more? Have you ever thought of writing your own epitaph?
No, except if I wanted to write an epitaph, it would be something like, "Here lies the truth."
Words from some of the masters of Hollywood. One of the reasons I came to America was to capture interviews with cinematic legends of the time. I did a great many, and decades later, I shared a couple of them with my Score audience. I hope they were as enjoyable for you as they were for me. The Score has given me amazing opportunities to interact with entertainers and composers on a very meaningful level. Over the years, I've struck up a friendship with some of Hollywood's most sought-after composers, including Brian Tyler, who composed the fanfare for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. When Marvel updated their famous comic book page-turning opening music to Brian's new composition, the Score was the first program in the world to air that now iconic fanfare. Here it is. You know it's a great talent when the notes of the music last 28 seconds, but it instantly conjures up memories that last a lifetime. Thanks, Brian Tyler, for being a friend of the Score. I'm Edmund Stone, creator, host, and producer of the Score. Still to come, More of my favorite moments from two decades of The Score, including some quirky comedic episodes I call The Edmonds, an entirely made-up award, but the kind you wish Hollywood would give out. And please join me on my personal and professional journey on the show over the last few years, as I have sought to make classical music more accessible through the program, and to bring more light, hope, and laughter to listeners in these challenging times. I hope you're enjoying this special 20th anniversary program. If you are, then please like and share it with family and friends on your favorite social media. You can also send me your comments directly at Edmund, that's E-D-M-U-N-D, at thescore.org. I'd love to hear from you. Support for The Score comes from Portland Pet Food Company, offering 100% USA-sourced and made dog and cat meals, prepared with 11 or fewer human-grade ingredients, no preservatives, and ready to serve. Woman-owned and operated in Portland, Oregon, their meals are crafted with even picky pets in mind. Information at portlandpetfoodcompany.com. This year marks the 20th anniversary of The Score. Along the way, we've celebrated a number of movie milestones for franchises that are so popular they are becoming part of the fabric of our culture. I commemorated James Bond 6 decades of saving the world in 2023 with The Score's 007 at 60. I relished putting together that two-part show, looking back at the dashing actors who played the title character, the outstanding popular music that became the hallmark of each film, and of course, the signature theme penned by Monty Norman. The spy we love has changed, and villains have devised more devious plots. But that music still means Bond, James Bond. James Bond theme, echoed in every Bond film. Composed by Monty Norman, the guitar motif heard in the original 1962 recording was played by Vic Flick, something for which he was paid a one-off fee of £6, equivalent to $16 at the time. Nobody does it better. The score has given me amazing opportunities to go beyond the box office, working with new composers, bringing extraordinary yet often unknown music to audiences. One of the hallmarks of the year-long season of the score has been holiday specials. Christmas and Halloween are always popular shows, but some of the episodes on which I receive the most enthusiastic comments are on other cultural celebrations, such as Women's History Month, Black History Month, and Indigenous Peoples Day. It has been my honor to work with some of these gifted composers, showcasing their unique contributions to the ever-evolving world of film and film music. Composers Rachel Portman, the first woman to receive an Oscar for Best Score, and Grammy-winning composer Star Parodi, former president of the Alliance for Women's Film Composers, have been honored guests on the show. That was the end title from the 1996 film Emma, composed by Rachel Portman. She became the first woman composer to win the Academy Award for Best Score with her work on Emma. The score episode highlighting films made by and about Indigenous peoples was one of my favorites to create. Some movies I have featured on this show have never released soundtracks commercially, and it has always been one of my greatest personal honors to receive original recordings from the composers themselves, heard for the very first time on radio on The Score. Here is some of the music by one of these composers, Chris Crilly, from the 2001 film Atanarjuat, The Fast Runner, a film based on Inuit traditional stories, featuring an all-Inuit cast and traditional music, which includes throat singing and Ajaja songs. Some of the traditional Inuit music from the 2001 film Atanarjuat, The Fast Runner, featured on The Score, in a show crafted in honour of Indigenous Peoples Day. The stories these movies tell and the authentic music that accompanies them are hidden gems. I've been privileged to bring them to new audiences through The Score. I'm Edmund Stone, creator, host and producer of The Score. Today, it's our 20th anniversary show, featuring some of my personal favorite moments of the past two decades of music in the movies. From the beginning of The Score, episode 3 to be precise, I wanted to make classical music more accessible for more people. This isn't exactly a new concept. In fact, Warner Brothers had done a brisk business for years in blending comics with classics in their animated cartoon shows, especially Bugs Bunny. Having been good friends with the often imitated but completely original Mel Blanc, who voiced the vast herd of characters that entertained generations of children, I felt that it was appropriate to bring Bugs and friends into The Score. 1957's What's Opera, Doc? Featured Bugs Bunny as Brunhilde, the Valkyrie, and Mel Blanc also performed The Rabbit of Seville. A total of 15 classical pieces found their way into Looney Tunes. Let's hear some. Thank you.
A longing burns deep inside me.
Return, my love. I want you always beside me.
Love, why cause must be
made for you and for me. Return, won't you return, my love, for my love is yours.
How do? Welcome to my shop. Let me cut your mop. Let me shave your crop. Dinkily, dinkily. Hey, you. Don't look so perplexed. Why must you be vexed? Can't you see you're next? Yes, you're next. You're so next. How about a nice close shave? Teach your whiskers to behave. Lots of lather, lots of soap. Please hold still, don't be a dope. Now we're ready for the scraping. There's no use to try escaping. Yell and scream and rant and rave. It's no use, you need a shave.
Ooh, ouch, ouch, ooh, ouch, ooh, ooh, ouch!
There, you're nice and clean. Although your face looks like it might have gone through a machine.
Oh, where do I get the wabbit?
What would you want with a wabbit? Can't you see that I'm much sweeter? Senorita, you are my type of guy. Let me straighten your tie, and I shall dance for you. Next.
That really takes you back, doesn't it? That was Mel Blanc performing as Bugs Bunny, who was performing as Brunhilde, the Valkyrie. Oh, you know how it goes. Mel Blanc, the man of a thousand voices, was instrumental to generations in making classical music accessible. He was an inspirational talent. We were good friends in the 80s, and I learned a lot from him. Through 20 years, I've never lost sight of the fact that we love music and movies, and they can be just plain fun. Laughter makes everything more accessible. A few years ago, around the awards season time, I felt the red carpet shows were getting longer, but perhaps less entertaining. So, in a chocolate-infused state of inspiration, I began to wonder what an award for something utterly preposterous might look like. The Edmonds were born. These award shows are completely made up, and Oscar has nothing to worry about, but they are fun. The first round included categories such as Best Scream, Best Use of Made-Up Science, and so on. I had never received emails from listeners with so many smiley-faced emojis before. So the Edmonds became an annual staple. My personal favorite was Cheesiest Prop Used in a Movie. In my opinion, that was practically a given. It had to be the manipulator arm device of a Dalek in the Doctor Who universe. In other words, a toilet plunger. Here's some music and sound effects for that very special award.
Thank you.
That was music from the 1996 movie Doctor Who, featuring the sound of the TARDIS. I think it helps to never take oneself too seriously. Classical music is serious stuff, but that doesn't mean it's stuffy. Indeed, music has amazing powers to soothe and heal the human spirit. In the past decade, advancing technology and communication has inundated us with news of all kinds, almost non-stop. Music, particularly classical music, offers a unique respite in this world. Emotionally, I feel most satisfied doing shows that incorporate uplifting themes, creating more opportunities to reflect upon the good there is in this world. A favorite episode of mine is The Hero's Journey. This classic theme of taking on impossible odds for a greater good has been a part of our collective storytelling for millennia. In the 1930s, following the darkness of World War I, J.R.R. Tolkien began to write his epic stories about Middle-earth. In 2001, the Lord of the Rings trilogy swept over movie screens across the world as we followed the little hobbit, Frodo Baggins, in his quest to save Middle-earth from the clutches of the evil Sauron. Howard Shore wrote an extraordinary score for The Fellowship of the Ring. Shaw, conducting his work, The Council of Elrond, from the scene where Frodo agrees to undertake the quest to save Middle-earth. The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, from 2001, proves that the hero's journey isn't just for fearsome warriors. Hobbits can be heroes too. It is said that it is better to light a single candle than to curse the darkness. I like to think of each score episode as a spark of light in your day. Writing these shows certainly brings me joy. Episodes such as Everyday Heroes and Score Miniseries, The Transformative Power of Music, The Best of Us, and Feel Good Films are among listener favorites, and mine too. One film that always seems to be high on everyone's lists is the 2009 Pixar animated movie Up. It's a story about knowing what matters, friendship, and resilience. It can lift your spirits like having 10,297 helium balloons tied to your house. Michael Giacchino wrote a beautiful waltz to capture the spirit of the characters Carl and his beloved wife Ellie. The theme plays throughout the film, lifting us through times both good and bad, but always played with love. ¶¶ Married Life, composed by Michael Giacchino for the Academy Award-winning and uplifting 2009 Pixar film, Up. Pixar prioritizes storytelling over technology. The first foray of this animation studio was in 1995 with the original Toy Story. It embraces themes that most of us are very familiar with, that change can be scary, but it's inevitable, that enemies can become friends, that we all need and value belonging. Perhaps most of all, no matter how weird your friends may be, they are there for you. Randy Newman wrote and performed the iconic song, You've Got a Friend in Me.
You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Now some other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am, big and stronger too, maybe, but none of them will ever love you the way I do. It's me and you, boy. And as the years go by, a friendship will never die. You're gonna see it's our destiny. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
That was Randy Newman performing what just might be the happiest song in the movies, You've Got a Friend in Me, from 1995's Toy Story. Generations of children have grown up with that song, and it never fails to bring me a smile. I hope that each of you feels that you have a friend in me, Edmund Stone, creator, host, and producer of the score for the past 20 years. Let's do this again, soon. The Score is a production of All Classical Radio in Portland, Oregon. Production of The Score is made possible by Portland Pet Food Company, offering 100% USA-sourced and made dog and cat meals, crafted with even picky pets in mind. Information and store locations at portlandpetfoodcompany.com. The Score's executive producer is Fred Child. Production assistance is provided by Warren Black, Dylan Bodnarik, and Todd Dolanik. For more information about our show, visit us at thescore.org. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite social media. I'm your producer and host, Edmund Stone. Let's do this again soon.